Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and editor of the Business of Government magazine. There are approximately 75 days between a presidential election and the inauguration of a new president. And this is considered the presidential transition period. It is a time of opportunity and hazards for an incoming administration. The development of a government-wide presidential transition planning in the U.S. has a relatively short history. The next presidential administration and senior-level appointees need to be ready to lead and manage the government effectively when they step into office on day one. But what are the characteristics of a well-prepared, successful presidential transition? How does the 2008-2009 presidential transition represent a model to follow for future incoming and outgoing administrations? And what does the future hold for the U.S. presidential transition process? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Martha Kumar, author of Before the Oath, How George W. Bush and Barack Obama Managed a Transfer of Power. Welcome to the show, Martha. It's great to have you back.
Thank you, Michael. It's nice to be back.
I just finished your very, very interesting and timely book, Before the Oath, and let's talk about it. And what I'd like to do initially is set some context around the history of U.S. presidential transitions. And could you start by giving us an overview of the history and evolution of this effort? And what are the key aspects of the presidential transition of power?
There's not a long history to it of a formal transition. The first one where a president really thought out beforehand when he knew he wasn't going to be running for re-election, and it was important to him, the quality of the information he left behind, was Truman. Truman wanted to make certain whoever his successor would be would not be left in the same situation he was when he became president on the death of Franklin Roosevelt, because he had been in as vice president a short period of time, coming in January 20th, and then in early April, Franklin Roosevelt died and Truman became president. And he found that there was a great deal that he didn't know about what was going on in government, particularly relating to the war. And the biggest item was the development of the atomic bomb, and he had been unaware of that. And that really was important for him of what he did for his successor. He did not want that to happen to him. So what he did after he announced at the Jefferson-Jackson Day dinner that he wasn't going to run for re-election, then he talked to people in the Bureau of the Budget about preparing for a transition and gathering information. And because he did not want his successor to be left as he was. So they set about gathering the information. Truman also had wanted to go a step beyond what people had done before by bringing into the White House the candidates for the presidency after their nomination at their National Party nominating conventions. So what he did is he wrote both Adlai Stevenson and General Eisenhower about coming into the White House. And let me read to you the exchange, because in a way it's important in this transition, this past 2008 transition, because I think what had happened, what Truman tried to bring about, bringing the candidates in early, happened in 2008, but it happened in a different way. It was the representatives were brought in early. So in a way, it kind of closed that circle of what Truman had tried to do. So on August 13th, 1952, the president wrote to the candidates, I'll have General Walter Bedell Smith and the Central Intelligence Agency give you a complete briefing on foreign situation. And then following that briefing, they would have lunch with the cabinet. Now, these it would be separate times that Stevenson would come in and Eisenhower would come in. President Truman also indicated to Eisenhower that the CIA would provide him with information on the world situation on a weekly basis, and that's something Eisenhower took him up on. So after the initial CIA briefing, we will have luncheon with the cabinet, and after that, if you like, I'll have my entire staff report to you on the situation in the White House, and in that way, you will be entirely briefed on what takes place. Eisenhower wrote in response, "In my current position as standard-bearer of the Republican Party and of other Americans who want to bring about a change in the national government, it's my duty to remain free to analyze publicly the policies and acts of the present administration whenever it appears to me to be proper and in the country's interest. I believe our communications should be only those which are known to all the American people. Consequently, I think it would be unwise and result in confusion with the public mind if I were to attend the meeting in the White House to which you have invited me." And Truman was not happy. No, he wasn't. And you know that his response was going to be pretty strong. It was a handwritten response, and those he could mail when he was passing a mailbox on his morning walks. "I'm extremely sorry that you have allowed a bunch of screwballs to come between us. You have made a bad mistake, and I'm hoping it won't injure this great republic." Wow. But what he wanted to do was make sure that both candidates were well informed. But the politics at the time didn't call for it. Today, the situation is different. And in 2008, Josh Bolten, who was the chief of staff and in charge of the transition operations for President Bush, had representatives of both the Obama and McCain campaigns come into the White House and work on several different items that were going to be important to get straight before a new president took office. So they really thought through getting things in order and coming into the White House.
So what fact, I mean, you alluded to a couple with the evolution from Truman to sort of closing that circle with Bush, where some of the things that Truman wanted to happen did actually happen. What factors have contributed, in your mind, from your research, to the increase in importance of the presidential transition?
I think there's a increase in the importance of the presidency. Okay. And the president is a world leader, and the sense of time, that you just don't have time. You want to be knowledgeable when you come into office, and others in the political system and the public want that as well. And I think in 2008, one of the big factors were the attacks on the United States on September 11th, and a lot flowed from that. Congress passed legislation that the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act allowed for early security clearances for people coming into work on a transition. And those were important because these security clearances take a while. And now you have so many people that are working on a transition, and then many of them will go into the government itself in other positions. So you want to get that done as early as you can. And the administration made sure that that happened.
But one thing I found very interesting, and I think your readers would find interesting, is that there's no constitutional requirement or guidelines that shape what is incumbent upon the sitting president to give the next administration. Would you tell us whether you think there should be a more formal legal law or requirement around that?
Well, I think now you have legislation that does require that they gather information on presidential appointments. Mm-hmm. That at one time was given after the election. You need it way before that. So I think it's worked well. Okay. And so in some cases, why have a lot of legislation on something that's worked well? But I think it's worked well after an 8-year term. Mm-hmm. I think if it's a 4-year term, that's a different matter.
Your book does a wonderful job of laying out, and I don't want to get too academic, but it does a wonderful job of giving the legislative regime, if you will, of what rules or what laws apply to how the transition, whether it's funded, what's available. Could you give us a sense from like 1960s to now, what laws are out there?
Well, in the 1960s, in that period and a bit earlier, the parties picked up the tab.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So there wasn't government funding of transition. It really was just privately done because it or through the parties, but with money left over from the campaigns. That you didn't anticipate that it was going to take that much to transition. And then in 1963 is the first legislation. And with that legislation, you do have funding. It didn't say exactly how that money was to be divided. And from Johnson's viewpoint, he saw that it should be the amount of money should be divided equally between the incoming and outgoing presidents. But that later got got changed so that that was not the case. Then you have, because the money isn't really turned out not to be sufficient, then you begin to have private funding. And so Nixon raised $1 million to help his transition. Then gradually there's a discussion of whether you could use campaign funds, and which is what Carter wanted to do to help prepare for the transition. But that was denied by the Federal Election Commission. Then gradually, Congress recognized that they needed outside money. Mm-hmm. And because now it takes about, say, somewhere about $12 to $15 million to do a transition. So you're going to have to raise outside money. But then they became sensitive to, if you're going to raise outside money, then you have to have restrictions on it. So then they began putting restrictions on it as well as increasing the amount of money and making sure there was a difference between the amount of money that the president, the incoming president was to get, as well as the outgoing would get substantially less. Say by 1992 that the allocated government funds were $5 million. And then in private fundraising in 92, they had about $5.3 million. So gradually, the amount of outside money has gone up substantially. And Congress became sensitive to issues such as the disclosure of in-kind contributions. And so contributions then had to include things such as what kinds of furniture, staff, all sorts of things that people were giving that were in-kind that they had to be disclosed as well. Then in 2000, in the 2000 Act, required that the National Archives and Records Administration and the General Services Administration were required to create a directory of information on federal departments and agency. And GSA was required to talk to candidates about communications and computer systems, the more they became a factor. Mm-hmm. And that requires a lot of work, of early work, because you want to have a secure system. And then into the whole process comes the Office of Government Ethics, which begins their work in with presidential appointments in the Reagan administration, and becomes another factor in a transition that you have to consider, is getting through the whole process of disclosure of finances. So generally, it has just become a lot more expensive. And with the many more requirements that there have been. So it's more money and more regulation.
What are the characteristics of a well-prepared, successful transition? We'll explore this question and so much more when our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns.